We have been talking about relationships in life, and tonight we're going to talk about, actually it's lesson number 12. I want you to take your Bible and turn to 1 Peter chapter 3. 1 Peter chapter 3. A couple of weeks ago, we started into just a little miniature section within this series, and we've been talking about the subject of marriage. Tonight, I'm going to cover part 3 of the thought that marriage is the many relationships within a marriage. And we're going to start the very same scripture that we've used the last couple of weeks, 1 Peter chapter 3. I want you to find verse number 1, 1 Peter chapter 3. And I'm going to read, starting with verse number 1, the Bible says this: "Likewise, you wives, be in subjection to your own husbands, that in if any obey not the word, they also may without the word be won by the conversation of the wives, while they behold your chaste conversation coupled with fear, whose adorning let it not be the outward adorning of the plaiting of the hair and of the wearing of gold or of putting on of apparel, but let it be the hidden man of the heart, in that which is not corruptible, even the ornament of a meek and a quiet spirit, which is in the sight of God of great price. For after this manner, in the old time, the holy women also, who trusted in God, adorned themselves, being in subjection unto their own husbands, even as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters ye are, as long as ye do well, and are not afraid with any amazement. Likewise, ye husbands, dwell with them according to knowledge, giving honor unto the wife as unto the weaker vessel, and as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers be not hindered. Finally, be all of one mind, having compassion one of another, love as brethren, be pitiful, be courteous, not rendering evil for evil or railing for railing." Now look back at me, if you will. That passage of Scripture predominantly is talking about the subject of marriage. Now, when I started this lesson, we'll finish up tonight with marriage, and we're going to go on to some other relationships. But when I started, I told you here in this passage, you see different types of relationships that are a part of the relationship called marriage. It's almost like one time I said it's like a pie. Mrs. Owens makes me a pie, and there's a lot of different ingredients that will go into that pie. Now, you say, which is the most important ingredient? I'm not real sure. I think you take any one of them out, it might not be what we would call the predominant ingredient, but it is an ingredient, and it mixed with the other ingredients gives you that finished product, which is a pie. And if you don't like pie, you're just dumb, dumb, dumb. And I'm quoting Gomer Pyle there. But you know, we like pie. You take, for instance, a salad. You know, when you have a salad, there's not just lettuce necessarily in it. There might be some cucumbers in there or some onion. Maybe you put a crouton or two or some carrots, and maybe you like cheese in your salad and some tomato in your salad. There's a lot of different things that go in a salad. You say, what's the most important ingredient? I'm not really sure that I know. But those different ingredients all put together turn it into the salad that it is, and there's a culmination of the flavor and the taste, and then it turns out to be a salad. You like the way it tastes. Hey, and I think people that work a little harder at it even like the way it looks. You know, there are different colors of things inside that dish that make that salad special. Marriage is one big relationship that is made up of a variety of smaller relationships. And maybe it is, if we, by analyzing it the way that we are, maybe we're helping ourselves. When you look at the one big relationship called marriage, and you look at it and you say, "Boy, I'm just not really sure what I need to do with this thing. Maybe it's a little overwhelming." So what we're doing is we're breaking it down into little bite-sized bits. And you can look at each one of these relationships and say to yourself, okay, I'm a little weaker in that relationship within the big relationship. I'm a little stronger in that one. It'll help you to know which one you need to work on. Now, I started out, and because the Bible uses the word conversation two times in 1 Peter chapter 3, speaking of marriage, I told you that one of the relationships within the relationship of marriage is you're to be communicators. You need to learn to talk to each other. You need to learn how to, and now communication, folks, is not just talking, it's listening. It's listening with the ears. It's listening with the heart. It's listening with compassion and desire. And let me tell you, one of the big things that will stop your ears up really quickly, it's a thing called pride. But you need to be communicators. Many, many times a marriage could be made better if we just communicated better, if we would just talk and if we would listen and not just listening with the ears, but listening with the heart. But one of the ingredients in our salad is being a communicator. Secondly, the Bible uses the word, it says in 1 Peter 3:8, it says, having compassion one of another, love as brethren. Now, God is saying that you can learn something for your marriage by looking at the relationship, a good relationship between a brother and a sister, siblings. And I told you this, with a brother and sister, honestly, brother and sister, neither one is father, neither one is mother. Neither one actually has a power over the other. And I realize that mom and dad may go out on a date and leave the oldest brother, the oldest sister in charge. But they're still just brothers and sisters. They're still common. Brothers and sisters, I think, brothers and sisters need to learn to get along. They need to learn to communicate. They need to learn to care about each other. They need to learn to attend to one another's needs, because it is a preparatory relationship for marriage. And folks, not all the time is marriage, you know, you're young, you're married, and you have a passion for one another, and you want to be friends and lovers and all of that. But life is not 365 days a year full of this this passion for one another. Sometimes it's just a common everyday living together, and that common everyday living together is what a brother and sister do when they live in the same household. They just, in a common way, every day, get along as they go about their life. And you know something? You know what we need to do in our marriage? In our everyday life, we need to live our life and get along. And there's a commonality. There's not a leverage that one has over the other. But I think within our salad, not only are we to be communicators, but we have the ingredients of being siblings or having a relationship like a brother or sister. Then we went to the third ingredient, which was friendship. And we are to be friends in our homes. Dads, you need to be friends to your sons. And dads, you need to be friends to your daughters. Moms, you need to be friends to your sons. And moms, you need to be friends to your daughters. We're not taking away the fact that you're mom and dad. Folks, you don't to add a relationship in life does not necessarily mean you're eliminating another. It means you're adding to. Mrs. Owens and I, before we had children, we were a married couple. We did not have to give up the marital relationship to add children. It was a relationship added to what we already had. And then when our children had children and we became grandparents, she's been a grandmother far longer than I've been a grandfather. But we didn't have to give up being parents to add grandparent to the relationship. And life, we're virtually gathering relationships and we're adding them to existing relationships. And that's what marriage is. Marriage is a relationship, and we're just adding ingredients to it. And when we add those ingredients and we add them in the right proportion, in the right way, we're building something that's beautiful. And so not only should parents be friends to their children, hey, you young people, you ought to be a friend to your mom and dad. You ought to be a friend to your mom and dad. You ought to care about your mom and dad. These young people, it wouldn't hurt you to realize something. There are times when dad comes home from work and he's had a rough day. You might not understand it, but your day's going to come and you're going to understand it. You know, you got home and you asked dad for $15 or $20, maybe worse than that. You're going to play basketball and you're asking for $70 to buy one shoe for the basketball team. I can remember when that stuff started coming to my house and I'm going, what? They went, how much? And you have to have those shoes to play? Well, who invented basketball? What a stupid game. And so now dad just found out that they're cutting the overtime at work, and they're a little worried about losing a contract. And so he's wondering how he's going to pay the electric bill, and now you need $70 or $80 for a pair of tennis shoes, and you're wondering what's wrong with your dad. It might be good for young people to take a look at dad and realize dad has burdens too. You're supposed to care about dad. You're supposed to care about mom. And so I think parents ought to be friends to their children and children to their parents. But husband and wife, let me tell you something, you ought to be friends. Husbands, you make your wife your best friend, and wives, you make your husband your best friend. And you say, but I need somebody that I can pour my heart out to. Let me warn you, you better pour your heart out to your mate or pour your heart out to God. But whatever you do, if you're married, don't you go pouring your heart out to the opposite sex, someone that you're not married to. You'll regret that. The devil will use that and hurt you. So we see that ingredient. It's the ingredient of friendship. So we're to be communicators, an ingredient in the salad. We're to be like brothers and sisters, another ingredient in the salad. We're to be friends. And then we're to be deep lovers. And that's, remember, I taught the lesson, the difference between agape and phileo. And I told you that we're to love with a love like God loves. That's a spiritual love. That is a love that is not dependent on the object, but is dependent on the lover. I am to love my wife not because of what she is, but I'm to love my wife because of what I am or what I'm supposed to be. Hey, and that's, everybody here understand, that's how we're supposed to love sinners. We're to love a sinner not because of what they are, but because of what we are. That's what Jesus did. So there's a deep spiritual, what they call the agape love. That's where it said, husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself for it. But we're to be deep spiritual lovers. Then, not only that, we touched on the fact that we're to have a physical relationship in marriage. I reminded the young people that physical relationship, you should wait for that until you're married. But married people, there's a physical relationship. And that's another element of your salad. The Bible talks about it in a lot of different ways. But you're not to men should not withhold themselves from their wives physically, nor should the wife withhold herself from her husband, unless you're fasting and praying, unless there's maybe a moment of sickness. But sickness can be used for an excuse for a lot of things. Well, I've heard that thing milked for everything it's worth in life. But I'm just here to tell you, it's another part of the relationship. Now, next we said, you're to be servants to one another. And that's where we, in 1 Peter chapter 3, it used these words. It says, be pitiful, be courteous, not rendering evil for evil. The word courteous there, that is the word, it's a word like being a host, or being almost like a bellhop, if you will. We are to be concerned with serving one another. Hey, you know, you even take that thing of being a servant. That goes all the way to the physical relationship. Every man in here, you ought to want to meet the need of your wife. We can all become pretty self-centered. We become self-centered in many, many different ways of life. If you would like to have a better physical relationship, men, be concerned at pleasing your wife, and ladies, be concerned at pleasing your husband. Serve them rather than being self-centered and conceited and what do I get out of this, but what can I do for another? That's the Christian life in a nutshell anyway. But we're to be servants to one another. Now, that brings us to where I want us to be tonight. This is actually the beginning of lesson number 12, having to do with the many relationships within marriage, and this is part C and the final part on marriage, and we'll go on to some other things. I think there's a misunderstanding about marriage. Somebody said out there somewhere, they said marriage is a 50-50 agreement. Now that sounds good, and I know what they were trying to get across, but I'm going to tell you I disagree with that. I happen to believe marriage is a 100-100 agreement. You say, what exactly do you mean by that? Well, I don't think the husband's supposed to give half of him and the wife is supposed to give half of her, and as a result of that, you get a whole marriage. No, the husband, he's to give his 100%, and the wife is to give her 100%, and those two 100s will give you what you're looking for. So I don't think it's a 50-50 thing. I think it's a 100-100. Now, I also want you to understand something, and here's where a lot of people go wrong. Marriage is not a deal. It's not a deal. You scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. You be good to me, I'll be good to you. You do what you're supposed to do, I'll do what I'm supposed to do. You be kind to me, I'll be kind to you. I'm very sorry. You know what? I'm to be kind to my wife if my wife is an old hag to me. You say, why? Because it's the right thing to do. Christianity's not a deal. God, you be good to me, I'll be good to you. You better be good to God. I'll guarantee it, God will do his part. God's the one that's always coming up short-handed, and he's always, and what I mean is, he's always the one that is mistreated. He always, you know something? God always does the right thing no matter what you do. So don't get this idea about marriage that it's a deal. It's not a deal. It is a commitment. You say, well, what am I supposed to be committed to as a husband? Doing the right thing as a husband. You say, but wonder if my wife won't. Is that how you raised your kids? If their brother wouldn't do right by them, it's okay for them to do wrong by their brother? That's how you believe? Why, no, you don't. You say, I don't care what your brother did. You're to do the right thing. When I help people with marital counseling, a husband can tell me everything that he wants to that's wrong with his wife. A wife could tell me everything that she wants to that's wrong with her husband. Did you know something? A husband can't change a wife, and a wife can't change a husband, but a husband can change himself, and a wife can change herself. And if I could talk every husband into fixing himself up and him becoming the right kind of Christian and doing the right thing and being the right kind of a person, and then if his wife would fix herself up and do the right thing, no matter what her mate did, you know, we could get a husband that's doing right and add that to a wife that's doing right, and then you can fix a marriage. But as long as you've got a husband saying, this is what's wrong with her, and a wife saying, well, this is what's wrong with him, and they're both shooting at each other, and neither one are fixing the only person in the relationship they can fix, which is themselves, you get nowhere. Shooting at each other, criticizing each other, critiquing each other, tearing each other apart. So I'm just here to tell you, as a husband, it is my job to do what is right, no matter what my wife does. It is my wife's responsibility as a wife to be everything that a Christian wife ought to be, no matter what I do. You know, that'll help you to live with yourself. You can lay your head on your pillow at night if you're doing what you're supposed to do. That'll also help you with God. You can go to God and say, well, I'm just sick and tired of my husband, or I'm sick and tired of my wife. How about you being able to go to God and say, God, I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. There's a peace in obedience. So, marriage is a bit miscommunicated, especially secularly. And the weaker you get in the Christendom, the more secular psychology is pulled into it. And there's a difference in that kind of psychology in the Bible. It's not a 50-50 thing. It's 100-100, and it is not to tear each other apart. It is to build one, which is the one that you can build, and that's you. You fix you, I fix me. That's the same thing in the church. You can criticize other people all you want, but what you need to do is work on you, and I need to work on me. Now, let me give you some ingredients, a couple more ingredients tonight, in regard to this salad that we're building. For instance, I'm going to read to you from 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verse number 2. It says, for I am jealous over you, and with godly jealousy, I'm sorry, let me read it again. For I am jealous over you with godly jealousy, for I have espoused you to one husband that I may present you as a chaste virgin to Christ. Now, here it's talking about espousal. Now, that means partners. When Mary and Joseph were not married, some would say that they were engaged. The truth is, the Bible teaches they were espoused. Espoused is stronger than engagement. It's basically marriage before they came together physically. Now, the word espouse means partners. That's what that word, and we won't go into it, but the Greek word for the word espouse or espousal means partners. It's virtually like being business partners. This means, folks, now let's all face something. I'll tell you the four big issues in marriage. I deal with these over and over and over again. Most marital problems are caused because of one of these four, or many of these four. Most divorces are caused by one of these four. It's your relationship with the family or in-laws, alias the outlaws. You fuss about the children. You fuss about the intimate life, or there's weaknesses in the intimate life. And then finally, finances. Finances. Boy, finances can take a B-plus marriage and with one paycheck turn it into a D-minus marriage. Just like that. Finances can be that way. Here, the Bible's talking about espousal. Espousal means partners. And anybody here that knows a husband and wife that you know, we are there. You got to face it. There's a certain business partnership that's going on. You say, why? Well, there are people paying bills and bringing money in, and there's money being spent, and there are decisions being made. And so, you're partners. And I'll use the term business partners. Now, business partners make a lot of decisions. They make a lot of decisions. They make decisions about what to buy and what not to buy. And business partners make decisions on what to spend and what not to spend. And business partners make decisions on who we're going to associate with and who we're not going to associate with. So within a marriage, there is a partnership, and it's almost like a business partnership. We've already learned that we need to become communicators, but let me tell you some things that you need to work on in regard to this thing of being partners, like business partners. Money is one of them. Money. Now, money can get us in a lot of trouble really, really fast. Case in point, the United States of America. The United States of America thinks, okay, if we have financial problems, we'll just go print more money. That sounds like something a third grader would do to me. We'll just make more. Okay. Well, we'll just go get more. Okay. If you go get more by earning it, that's one thing. But if you go get more continually by borrowing it, you do know sooner or later you're going to have to pay it back. And always remember this. I'm not, if somebody here, you're going to think that the preacher's trying to be mean to you, and I'm not. If you're struggling getting a loan for a house, I'm not mad at you, but let me tell you something. It is a good thing for the United States of America that they tightened up the ability for people to borrow money. I wish some of you knew what was happening in the housing market. They were driving by, and they were analyzing the value of a home without even really looking at it because there was just so much money out there, and people were borrowing right and left, and okay, we'll just give you money. Remember this. So they're lending people beyond their means and not exactly sure that the value of that home or whatever they were borrowing was worth what they were giving them in regard to money. Now, folks, let me explain something to you, and always remember this. Your bank does not love you. They don't love you. Your bank will give you more money than some of you can handle borrowing. They'll do that. Now, that's how they make their money. And I'm not saying that your banker hates you, but I will tell you they're out to make money. That's what they do. So you need to be careful. Now, husband and wife, you need to work together on the finances. Finances can cause fusses. Borrowing. If you borrow and you borrow and you borrow, eventually you're going to have to pay it back. Here's what happens. People go out and they get themselves in so deep. Before long, they're working 12 hours a day. They don't come to church on Wednesday night. They don't come to church half the time on Sunday. They can't get involved in anything around the church. Why? Because they're trying to be honest, decent people, but they're working 80 hours a week. So they don't come to church because they're out trying to get the money to pay back everything that they borrowed. Now, I have to tell you something. If I were you, I'd be real careful that you get to serve God and you get a serving because you can do it in a common way and you're not so deep in debt that you got to work 15 hours a day, 7 days a week. I know some very good people that love the Lord that used to go to church Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night. They don't do it anymore. Why? They borrowed beyond their means, and now the husband's working all day, and the wife's working all day, and they work every day, and they work all the time, and now they're out of church. That's not good for you. You borrowed beyond your ability to repay. You say, well, how do I know that? Well, there are ways of calculating, but some of you just need to face your own character. Now, Your business partners, though, you got to learn to get along. I recommend to marriages that you probably just need to get a budget. And a budget is this. You decide how much money is going to be given to different parts of the family need, and that amount of money goes toward that. We don't just reach our hand in our wallet every time we turn around, just spend. You know what needs to be spent. You know what it's going to be spent on. And if you do that, and a husband and wife agree to that, and then they follow that, it'll keep them from fussing. It keeps someone from overspending. And this is not always true, but I do a lot of financial counseling. Most of the time people say to me, I can't do it. I can't do it. I can't do it. I can't pay my bills. I said, you bring me all your bills. And they bring me all their bills. I said, now you bring me, I want to see everything that you are making. I want to see all your income. And do you know what? I sit down, I write down everything that they're making, I write down everything that they're spending, and in most cases, they make enough money to pay their bills. They just don't spend their money right. And so I put it on paper. I'll say, you'll need this much a week to pay for this, and this much a week to pay for this, and this much a week to pay for this, and you're going to have a little money left over at the end of this thing. And now you go follow that. And they don't. And they go back out and they throw that aside and say, I can do this, I can do this. I don't need any organization to do this. But a budget helps. If we ran the church the way most marriages run their finances, you all wouldn't come to church here. You say you blow money any way you want, anywhere you want. You just spend it any way you want. You just do whatever you want and buy whatever you want. And then come around and say, can't do it. I won't be able to be in church this week. We don't have enough money to come. Gotta go get money. You'd say, Pastor, this is not ran right. We got to run your home right. You know what we do? We study the finances and we come up with a budget. And then, do you know what we do? We come to you and say, let's all vote on this. We all vote on the budget. Then we have to follow that to the T all year long. You've watched it. We come back to you and say we need $137 moved from over here to pay for this, but we all agree we were going to stay within the confines of this budget. And you all say, I love this. Look at that. We pay for that auditorium cash, and look what we got here, and look at this. And the pastor's not coming to us all the time just saying, we're going to close this place down if we don't get any more money. Lock the doors. We're going to take an offering, and I don't want it to be high pressure, but get your checkbook out and take your diamond ring off and get the offering trays ready. You say, I'm not coming to this place. But that's how some people run their finances at home. A budget will make all the difference in the world. Now, we're business partners, and then I'm going to promise you, you get a husband and wife, and there's so much pressure, and they're just working, trying to pay everything off. Well, that'll affect your physical relationship. That'll even affect your health. It'll affect your attitude. But you got to get it under control. Now, business partners. We're business partners. There are decisions that we need to make together. We make decisions together about money. We make decisions together about the children. I don't think a wife ought to feel like she's a widow when it comes to raising the kids. You say, if a man says, you know what, I earned the money, you do everything else. There's a little bit more to it than that. If you'd study what the Bible says, fathers, there's a little bit more to it than that. But I think you make decisions together. I would be careful. Did you know that a husband and wife working together, even you take the disciplining of the children, so often the discipline falls to one or the other. Yeah, I think your kids ought to know that mom and dad are together on the fact that you're going to ground your teenager for life. You've heard it. Go to your room and don't ever come out again. And your mother and I both want you grounded. Double dog grounded. Okay. But I'll tell you what, if mama is the one that has to do all the disciplining all the time, the children begin to have a sour attitude toward mom, that's not fair. If daddy's the one that does all the disciplining, then they develop a bad attitude toward dad. So you know what's supposed to happen. You're to be partners. You work together on it. But you're partners. You make decisions together. You take work. I think husbands and wives, they ought to work together in regard to what they're doing with work. I think that's important. I I do not think that a man has to give answer to his wife about where he's at every minute of every day, but I do think this. I think it is very common and decent if a man's going to work over that he gives his wife a call and says, hey, they asked me to stay over a couple hours. Nothing wrong with that, especially if she's cooking him supper. And it's just being decent. And I'd just call home, find out what she's making. You may not want the overtime if it's good enough. I mean, you know, fried chicken, mashed potatoes, and gravy. Let the boss get somebody else to work the overtime. You're going home to get the chicken. But you ought to work together on that. So your business partners. I'm going to read a passage of Scripture to you, and I want you to listen right at the end of it. It's Ephesians chapter 5, verse 18, 19, 20, and 21. It says, "And be not drunk with wine, where is in excess, but be filled with the Spirit, speaking to yourselves in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody in your heart to the Lord, giving thanks always for all things unto God and the Father in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ." And then it says, "submitting yourselves one to another." In the book of 1 Corinthians, it talks about husbands and wives learning to submit themselves one to another. Now, I'll say this in a minute, but I understand God's chain of command. There is God, and then God said there's a man. You've heard the term the head of the household. Now, God's the one that dreamed that up, and so that's what God teaches. And then the ladies, the wife, she's right. In all actuality, the husband is the head of the household, and the wife submits to her husband, but they work together on things. And then the children. Now, But let me explain. I do not think that God never intended that the man never talk to his wife and never share things with her. And I don't think God ever intended that. I think men and wives, I think they're supposed to be communicators and they're supposed to talk. Boy, there are times when my wife and I had talked about something and she shared an angle with me that I had just not thought of. And I was glad that I heard her out. Now, in the end, I'm going to give answer to God. And you men, you'll give answer to God because God teaches that the man is the head of the household. But at the same time, we work together and we submit ourselves one to another in the fear of God. So when the Bible uses the word espoused, and it speaks of us being espoused, he's talking about being partners, like business partners, where we share together in making decisions. And then, let me go to another before I run out of time. The next ingredient in our salad, as I'm explaining it tonight, is we're to be admirers of one another. 1 Peter chapter 3, verse number 6, it says, "Even as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters ye are, as long as ye do well." Now, when Sarah called Abraham Lord, of course, a lot of people capitalize on this and they turn it into a dictatorial thing. I think there's great respect that's being shown here. She called him Lord. Matter of fact, I think she was calling him, you know, when I call Jesus Lord, I am not in fear and trembling and cowering in the corner. Not at all. When I call him Lord, I'm admiring and respecting and looking up. And though indeed Lord is a position, it's an exalted position, but I believe it's also a very admired position. I believe that Sarah admired Abraham. Now, she respected him. I think she obeyed him. But I think she respected him. Folks, again, a very simple concept in Christianity. Do you know it would be very smart for every husband in here to look at your wife's attributes and admire those positives that are in her life? I think that every man in here ought to look at his wife's strengths and admire them, and every woman in here ought to look at her husband's strengths and admire them. And not only admire them, tell them that you admire them. I would tell others what you admire about them. If you go to the passage of Scripture that is found in the Song of Solomon, you're going to find that the woman in the Song of Solomon, and there's different takes on exactly what was happening in the Song of Solomon, but one thing we know, there was a man and a woman, maybe a husband and a wife, or whatever's happening. The woman in the story is sold out and enamored and dedicated to the man, and she's going around bragging about her man. Now, I think that all of us who are married ought to look at our mate's positives, and I think that those positives ought to be noticed by us, and I think our children ought to be told what their parents' positives are, and I think we ought to praise our mates for those positives. We're to be admirers. Maybe even secret admirers to a degree. And 1 Peter 3:4 talks about, but let it be the hidden man of the heart. So let me tell you this. Wives, I'll recommend something to you. You ought to know your husband's strengths. You ought to know about him those things that you admire. And it wouldn't hurt you. Hey, when you're having a bad day, and maybe you're upset with him, why don't you take a little while and just think about his strengths? Think about what he does right. Think about what he does good. And it'll help to heal you through the knucklehead thing that you feel like he just did. But you ought to know your husband's strengths. Men, you ought to know your wife's strengths. You ought to know her positives. Here's what we're very quick at. We're very quick to point out our mate's weaknesses. Very quick. When I'm refereeing in the church, If there are two men in the church and one did something and he thought it was right, and another did something and he thought it was wrong, and they're not getting along, and one comes to see me and says, I'll tell you what, Brother Owen, that old Joe over here, I can't believe, I'll say, let me tell you something. Oh, Joe's faithful. And Joe's sincere. And Joe's a hard worker. You know what you come see me and complain. You know what I'll start doing? I'll tell you the good things about him. And then the other guy comes in and says, oh, old George, that's a good name, old George over here. He says, old George, so dumb. What was he thinking? You know what I'll do? I'll just start telling about George's positives. You know, we've got a devil. He's real good at pointing out all of our negatives. But if we were smart, we would look at the positives of our spouse. I could help some of you with your kids. If you're not careful, and you may love your kids a lot, and you may want what's best for your kids, but you need to be careful. You can become so critical that all you notice are your child's negatives. I watch this happen over and over again. You bring home your report card. You've got an A, an A, an A, an A, an A, and a C. And what does your parent point out? What's this C? Are you stupid? I've got 8 A's and 1 C, and you're questioning whether I'm stupid or not? And let me tell you, kids, if your mom and dad do that, they love you. They want you to do your best. They like to see that C brought up to an A double plus, which would be better than most parents got when they were in school. Well, that really generated some excitement. But I'll tell you what we do if we're not careful. See, we gravitate toward the negative quite quickly. You know, if you get into a little tiff or a fuss in your marriage, boy, if you get in the flesh enough, you'll go after their weaknesses. And by the way, and by the way, and by the way, you start throwing all that out there. You know how you could end the argument? Instead of going after the negatives, start noticing the positives. Could bring that argument to a close pretty quick. Admirers. It probably wouldn't hurt for some marriages in here to do this. You ought to get a little private time. Go home and make a list of everything that's right about your husband. And go home and make a list about everything that's right about your wife. But you know what? You're really quick to know what's wrong. And in this story where Sarah calls Abraham Lord, she was admiring him. It was not just a, I'll bow down to you because you're the God of the house. She admired him. But take a look at the word Lord. The word Lord, he's not just the one that passes judgment. No, the Lord, that the word Lord has a sweetness to it. It has an admiration to it. When we say Abba Father, Lord, it's one of those same type words. It's got a gentleness and a thickness to it. So I think we should know our mate's strengths and their positives. Ladies, I think you already know this. Men kind of thrive off of admiration. Men, I hate to tell on you, they like to be praised. They like to have their head patted and their belly rubbed. Men like to have someone say, "You're strong. You're smart. You're so capable." I just warn you, ladies, you don't admire your man. Devil's liable to send somebody along that will. That admiration, it needs to be there. And here's what will happen to you if you're not careful. You'll criticize your man and criticize your man and criticize your man and point out his negative and gripe about this and gripe about that. And then somebody comes along and they praise and they praise and they praise. And though if you're a man and you say, "Yeah, that's exactly why I betrayed my wife." Well, you're a knucklehead and you should have never done that. And it didn't give you the license to do that. But I am telling you, ladies, praise your man. Don't let some other woman love your man more than you do, and don't let some other woman praise your man more than you do, and don't let some other woman notice your man's positives more than you do. There's something about my wife that just amazes me. I was going to tell you how old she is, but then I wouldn't be amazed for long. She loves to learn. She loves to learn. She's got visions of grandeur when it comes to learning. She'll tell me, she said, "I'm going to learn to do this." And the other day, Brother Pine was playing the saxophone, and my wife said, "I'm going to play the saxophone." And if somebody was in here, you know, playing a tuba, my wife would say, "That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to learn to play the tuba." She loves learning. I mean, she loves learning. And I really admire that about her. I mean, she's constantly, I'm looking and she's looking up this and looking up that, and she wanted to learn to do this and wanted to learn to do that. I love that. I love that. Now, look, the person that you married has a lot of positive attributes. If I were you, I'd get me a list. And the devil, you don't need a list of their negatives. Those, the devil, he'll help you with that. Those will come to mind just like that. But why sometimes do we struggle to find those positives? Men, you ought to know your wife's positives. Men, you ought to know your wife's positives. Admire one another. Same thing with your kids. Folks, let me tell you something. Some of the young people in here, look, on their worst day, they're better than what some of you parents were on. When you were their age, I just want you to stop and think about it for a second. You're so hard on your child, and hey, I want you to teach your kids, and I want them to do the right thing. But it might be wise for you to remember what you were when you were their age, and give a little thought to that. Now, this salad—it's got lots of different ingredients. You got to be business partners. That's one of them we talked about tonight. You got to learn to communicate. You got to learn to work with the finances together and make decisions together and work with the children together. You share that. You admire one another. Marriage, again, can be very misunderstood. It's not a deal. It's a commitment. It's not actually one relationship. It's a variety of relationships all tossed into one. You work on each of those. They all add to the success of the overall salad. You're to be communicators. You're to be like brothers and sisters. You're to be friends. You're to be deep spiritual lovers. You're to be physical lovers. You're to be servants to one another. You're to be business partners. And you're to be admirers. Now, let me tell you something. Remember this. You do your part. You let your spouse do their part. You make your contribution. They've got to learn to make their contribution. You be patient. It may be you see something that you feel like they ought to be doing more of in the marriage. Okay. You need to be patient and let them grow. But you say, okay, that, you know, she's withholding her ingredient. I'll withhold the same. And you think that's going to fix the problem? I mean, We needed two to make it happen, and she wouldn't do her part. So now you've got at least one contributing, and you decide, I know what I'll do. We'll both not contribute. Okay, that's brilliant. That is brilliant. You just fixed the problem. No, you just doubled the problem. You made it worse. Hey, learn to forgive. Learn to be patient. And it may be you ought to look at one of those areas and look at yourself and say, what is it that, what do I need to do? How can I fix me? But again, remember, and I'm finished, marriage, it is this big relationship. Within it, there are different moving parts. If we work on those little segments, it kind of gives us something to work toward. It kind of helps us to analyze the marriage and figure out what it needs. Hey, if you didn't catch anything but what I said tonight about the four big causes of marital problems, we disagree about the kids, we disagree or financial struggles, the intimate life, or the family or the in-laws, most people that come and see me, one of or all of those are what's causing them problems. Look at them, go to work on it. And if you ever need help, I'm glad to help you with your marriage. I'd be pleased to help you with your marriage, but it's just a relationship in life. And remember, your children are learning how to or how not to handle marriage by watching what mom and dad are doing at home, by watching in the church. Let's help our kids so that they one day will know how to handle themselves in marriage. Okay, let's bow our heads, every head bowed, every eye closed. In a moment when the pianist begins to play, we'll have a time of altar call. Young people, with your heads bowed, your eyes closed, let me remind you of something. Young people, you say, well, preacher, I'm not ready to get married yet. I know, but now's a good time to learn. You be learning. You be absorbing and learning so that when the day comes, you've got some things in your toolbox that will help your marriage. Parents, moms and dads, married people, let God help you. Some of you, I think you just the thought of, stop spending all your time figuring out what's wrong with him or what's wrong with her. Figure out what's wrong with you. That's the one you can fix. You say, our marriage is, it's 75% off kilter. You know what? How about you fix all of yours? You could raise the percentage. If you would just get all of you fixed, you'll fix part of the problem. Who here tonight would say, preacher, I've been challenged. I've learned something tonight. I see something that I can apply to my life, and it's going to help me. Would you raise your hand and let God see it? Sure. Lots of hands. It's good for us all. You may put those hands down. I'm going to ask the pianist to begin to play. Let's stand to our feet with our heads bowed, our eyes closed. If you need to come and take a moment and pray, you ought to do so. You come, ask God to help you, to strengthen you, to make you a better husband, a better wife. Young people, you can come and say, God, just help me. When I get to that day that I am going to be married, Lord, help me that I do it the right way. Just help me to do it the right way. Remember, we are to be communicators. Some of you need to work on the communication in your marriage. You need to be like brothers and sisters. It's not a lover relationship all the time. You need to live in the house, get along, resolve issues without wars, like siblings. You need to be friends. You need to be friends. You need to be deep lovers, and that's that agape love. That is the love that loves because of what you are, not because of what they are. Physical lovers, you need a physical relationship. It needs to be kept healthy. You need to be servants to one another. You watch for one another's needs. You become business partners where you share. You work on the finances together. You work on decisions about the children together. Things about work together. Things about church together. And then your admirers, you know your mate's positives. Devil will help you know the negatives. That's easy. You know their positives. You look at them and say they're a hard worker. They're honest. They're clean. They're decent. They're saved. They're in church. They're serving God. All those things are very important. You admire them. You let them know that you admire them. You let them hear about what you admire. You admire them when things are not going well, so you have a positive rather than a negative to think about. rather than complaining to your friends about your mate's negatives, why don't you tell your friends your mate's positives? The relationships within the relationship of marriage. One last time through the song, ushers, if you'll have the prayer bulletins ready.